Hey guys, it's Chad from the Puppet Parent Podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about ventriloquism, an amazing workshop with Sedwan Hooks, how we're doing in the pandemic this week, another white woke moment, our new summer schedule, and how to give notes.
Hi!
How are you? We're still here.
We're still here.
It's like we have a bed, like the baby mouse. We sleep in this place.
No, we don't sleep in this shelter. But we're so thankful for this place. We are coming at you live, Puppet Parent Podcast, from our summer residency at Springville Center for the Arts. Thank you, Springville Center for the Arts.
They're amazing.
And thank you to our neighbors and landlords, Love Inc. upstairs, who are also amazing. We record this podcast every single Sunday at our new time slot, 3 p.m., when it works for us. We're hopeful that will be our new regular time slot for now.
Seems so. I thought that this week we would have to change it up, but then it turns out that confirmed show in our calendar was just something from the before times.
Oh, right.
That I hadn't written, like officially written on the calendar.
PP.
Actually canceled.
Pre-pandemic.
That's right.
PP.
What a P COVID or P Cove?
Pre Cove. I don't know.
You're like, yes, the year of our Lord, 2020 PC.
I don't
know. Pre COVID or 2019. Anyway.
Anyway.
Good to see you guys.
We're so happy you're here with us. Feel free to ask us questions, say hi. We love hearing from you, especially sometimes we can see if you're watching, but sometimes we can't. So, you know, if you say a little hello, then we know you're there and you're interacting with us. We love that. So, so this week was a good week. It was a good week, right? I mean, as far as global pandemic and the political climate is concerned, you know, WonderSpark standpoint, it was a good week. Can we talk a little bit about?
I feel like I came into this week feeling like, yeah, okay, we got this. This is good. Full all the wheels are on the tracks and we're hurtling towards our destination in the apocalypse, like Blaine the Mono, you know. But then at the end of this week, I'm like, wow. And now looking at the calendar for next week, because I only look forward 1 week at a time, I'm like, and there's nothing.
That's not true. We're doing some workshops and stuff. That's not true.
No. I mean on a private show stream.
Oh.
And an income kind of a stream, you know, getting by on donations for the last, I want to say 14, 15 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, this is our 14th podcast, but there was one week that was a half podcast. So this is week 15.
This is going to be a short one because I have to teach more puppeteers at 4 o'clock how to be streamers.
That's right. Chad does this amazing workshop for people. They hire him to teach them how to bring their puppet show online. And you've been doing that for a number of months now.
A long time.
And each time he does it, he has more information to share because – just like all of you guys, if you're in a position where you're pivoting and, trying to bring your work online, we are also learning as we go. We're building the ship as we're building the plane as we're flying it.
Yes.
And, we have more information to share every single week. So.
Yeah. Roxy said that a while back, I think in a slam or something like that. But she also unleashed another quotable this week.
Oh yeah.
Roxy
Myram, artistic director of Puppet Show Place Theater out of Boston, which is one of my favorite puppet theaters of all time. She is just full of wisdom. My goodness. I love her so much. She's a wisdom quote machine.
She's like a soundbite wisdom just slinging at you.
I just want to take quotes and put them in my life everywhere. Yeah. So the quote that she gave is moving at the speed of truth.
Right now in the theater scene, we're moving at the speed of trust.
Yes.
Which is so absolutely the truth because even if parts of New York State, which we live in, are coming back full on phase four, everything's open and those communities have not been devastated or at risk for the virus, you can't go into a theater. Who's going to come to school? Nobody, because there's still a risk. And especially if these places in these big cities, we're from Queens, New York City, where you see these freezer trucks full of body bags of your neighbors or people that you rode the subway with. And those are bodies of people that aren't coming back. you can't go into a situation where other people are breathing the same air and expect to, like you just don't go, right? Yeah. So even if everything comes back, phase three is starting very soon, phase three out of four. Even when phase four comes back, even in Boston right now, certain things have just been named that are not going to be part of their phase four,
right.
Including things that are like theaters. So we're all kind of like, the theater scene will be back in full force once people feel comfortable. And how do you gauge that? You can't really.
Well, so either the virus has to die out and run its course, or mm-hmm. we have a vaccine. And hopefully it's the type of thing that can eventually die out and not continue to morph and change. We just don't know. But yeah. To any of our listeners and friends who are in states where cases are increasing at such high numbers right now, like California, Arizona, Florida, Texas, if you want to talk, seriously, we went through it and we get it. And I know that you feel like you've been in it for the last 3 months, but now things are getting really serious for you. And if you ever want to reach out and talk about what's happening and how you're feeling, do it, you know, because what's happening is trauma. You know, you're going through something really intense and very real and scary, and it's okay. And you're going to be okay. Don't let the swamp of sadness and despair get you down. Don't, you know, you got to fight through it. And I, you know, you're welcome to reach out to us. But if you feel like you need more support, you know, find somebody that you can talk to, because it's, you know, there are people that were lost because they couldn't handle the situation. And that's, we saw that a lot in New York City. There was a lot of suicide that was happening. So please self-check. You know, if you're feeling like you're not okay, then let's take a moment and figure out how we can get you to a place that you are going to be okay, and reach out to people. And if you want to, you know, check in, like, with people who have already been through it, we are here for you if you want to talk about it.
Yes, and send us a message, mm-hmm. and we'll talk. You know, on the other side of that, if you've, like, when the pandemic was first hitting New York City, we were getting these messages, not us personally, but the internet was getting these messages from Italy, because Italy and China were 3 weeks or a month, like, ahead of mm-hmm. us in terms of cases and the amount of craziness and death and et cetera. So this is us from your future. Hi. I know there's been a lot of polarization, politicalization of wearing masks or staying safe or whether this is a hoax. So I'm here to tell you, you need to take it seriously. Unlike, let's say, certain unnamed people in our lives right now who don't understand why we don't want to go to a vacation, or why we don't want to be traveling internationally, or even like across state lines to see family or anything like that right now.
Or even go to the grocery store more than once a week, more than we have to.
Like, sometimes it's not real until it mm-hmm. becomes personal, but I'm here to tell you, like, erring on the side of caution because we don't know the long-term effects of this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be the opera singer who gets permanent lung scarring, you know, or asthma that just won't go away. Like a lot of people are comparing this to AIDS, where it took 6 years for like a real lasting change, like a medical change to come. Mm-hmm. And nobody knew where it was coming from or where we were going. So, like, be as careful as possible, please.
Well, and my guess is that most of the people who, if not all the people who are watching this, are within the same kind of circle of understanding that we are in, that are taking it seriously. And my guess is that all of you are taking it seriously. But my suggestions to you is, if you have small kids and you're in a warm weather climate, because all these states that are experiencing these huge surges are in warm weather climates, so that means that you're not spending a lot of time outdoors because it's just too hot. So you need to be indoors. We got a doorway swing for our apartment, our tiny little two-bedroom apartment in New York City. And I'll tell you, that was a game changer. It was like a 6-in-1 doorway swing. I could even swing on it. That was huge for our family. It allowed for the kids to have some physical mobility every single day, and it allowed for us to even just like that, just that swinging motion really just relieved some stress that you don't even know that you have. And then also we did small things like we had medicine that we had bought just in case we got sick, you know, just NyQuil and DayQuil stocked. We had a his and hers, you know, because when things started to get really serious, the drugstores in town where we lived were all out. So they sold out of that stuff. Also with thermometers, sold out of thermometers. So, you know, go through your supplies, see if you have what you need. And if you don't, you know, make it, it is a peace of mind thing to have these things on hand, I found. Mm-hmm. And you just do it day by day, take it day by day. And again, if you want to talk about it, like, we're here for you. And I hope that things get better because it's scary. It's some scary stuff.
Yeah.
So. Yes.
Let's talk about. Enough of that.
It should be called the Puppet Parent Pandemic Podcast.
Yeah, right. The Pandemic Podcast, basically. But it's like it's such a huge part of our lives as parents and our lives as theater makers because guess what? We haven't performed live for anyone since March 12th. I did this last performance in the Bronx. I hope that like all those kids are okay because it's just like
kids and parents and families and teachers.
All
everybody.
These like all these like black poor kids, you know, like that's who got hit the hardest.
And there's lots of reasons for that.
Yes, many unjust reasons, and we've been smashing the racist patriarchy. Along with the rest of the country, we found a way. We went out and protested in this tiny little, my hometown village, Springville, New York, had an actual racist person come up and like be like, well, if you weren't from here, anyway, so.
We did that last two weekends in a row. There's no protest this weekend or else we would have joined it. And we're not like trying to make Springville have protests, but if Springville has a protest, we will be there because we support that kind of, you know, showing up.
Yeah.
We show up.
I mean, we had a moment where we talked about the protest with the protest organizer last week because they were a little like, I don't know, about like continuing to do this thing every week. And we were like, yes, please do it every week. Finally, we came to an understanding. We're like, okay, if our numbers are low, that means more trolls or more people are going to like feel empowered or emboldened to come talk to us for whatever reason, which is fine. But there are better venues to bring that kind of message. Right now, our fellow puppeteers, at the very least, the people's puppets of Occupy Wall Street have these huge parade puppets and are marching in the streets right now. Awesome. It looks so great. They have all these huge papier-mâché giant puppets of all the important queer figures in the Stonewall riots and in New York City history. And then, of course, the giant puppet of Lady Liberty. And I feel so inspired every time I see it. I'm like, of course, we need more of this. So to throw our hat into
I'm going to link to them because yes, they're just please. So great. And they have a Patreon, too, that you can contribute to monthly.
Awesome. Those guys rock. And early on in their history, I wanted to be a part so bad, but because I was a parent and I had all these other obligations, I couldn't be down in Zuccotti Park all the time like some of those guys could. It just didn't work out. But we can support them as best we can, including sharing their videos. If you like what somebody is doing or talking about, share that video because it helps everyone to burst out of the social media bubbles, as I'm going to talk about those puppeteers in like a little bit. But anyway, so last night, we started up our own series.
New series for WonderSpark, and I'm really excited about it. It's the kind of thing that I don't think would have happened if it hadn't been for the Black Lives Matter resurgence, because we've always been involved in some capacity with Black Lives Matter, but this new energy and momentum is like so invigorating and exciting. And so when we observed Blackout Tuesday as a company, we got together, Chad and I, and brainstormed, like, how can WonderSpark be continuing to support this movement in some capacity while also staying true to what we do as puppeteers and artists and sharers of information about puppetry. And what we came up with is a new series called Protest Puppets. And what it's going to be is maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, depending on people's schedules, we are going to host a puppeteer who is going to show us how to make a style of puppet that can then be brought to a protest as a symbol to be carried around with you and replicated easily. So you could make many of them if you wanted to. And we're going to have a lot of puppeteers of color who are going to come on and be a part of that series, as well as puppeteers who have been heavily involved in the protest movement for many, many years, who have a lot of information to share. And last night we debuted episode one with my good friend Sedwan Hooks. He's right now based out of Atlanta, Georgia, and has such an amazing resume of stuff that he's done and shows that he's been on and helped with. And he is like an up-and-coming puppeteer. He's like young, you know, and he's done so much already. And to have him kick this off was so great, because he could really speak. He's a puppeteer of color, and he could speak to what that has been like for him while he was building this amazing giant fist puppet that you can carry as your own fist in these protests. It looks so cool. So and it's just made out of basic materials that you can easily find around your house or easily obtain. So check that out if you haven't seen the video yet, and then make a fist and take a picture and post it in the comments of that video. We want to see everybody's fists high up in the air and saying, yes, we are part of this movement. Because, you know, we really are so excited about this series, because I feel like it's in line with all of the things that WonderSpark is about. You know, it's like sharing information, promoting puppetry, connecting people, bringing us together, you know, information for families. Like, this is the kind of stuff that we do, and it's all of it at once, and like, I'm so excited. So last night, Sedwan Hooks, check that video out. It was awesome. And then this Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, we're going to host Jason Hicks. He's based out of Detroit, Michigan, but he's been working with groups like Bread and Puppet and the People's Puppets of Occupy Wall Street for many, many years. He's been at tons of protests. He has so much information to share. And then we have more guests that we're in the process of scheduling. And if you are one of those guests and you're watching this, email me back. let's get that on the schedule. But because I'm just so excited about this series. And let us know what you think. If you watch the series, tell us what you think. If you have ideas of ways that we can make it even better, I want to hear about it. You know, we're really just trying to amplify people's work and people's ideas and their stories too. And what did I say to you last night? It's like Food Network, like almost, but like with puppets, you know, like you're making something, but also at the same time, we're talking about life and we're talking about real things and you're learning things. You're learning how to make something, but then you're also learning about this amazing person who's making the thing.
I learned a lot about him, and you asked him some questions, and he was in mostly he was like, that's a very good question. And those are questions I was like, wow, I cannot wait. As a white puppeteer who has been involved in the national community of puppeteers, who everybody bemoaned for decades is just all white and homogenous. So Z is asking Sedwan, puppeteer of color, hey, do you think there are more puppeteers of color out there that we just don't see? Like, you know, like how many puppeteers of color are there? You know, mm-hmm. Because like black female puppeteers are kind of like a unicorn. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking me that. And then he, you know, gave his amazing response.
And you should watch it to hear what he says. Leave it. But it was a insightful
dialogue. Yeah, he said, yeah, there's a lot of black puppeteers out there. And you, mm-hmm. you mentioned he agreed that a lot of them are involved in church
ministry
and ventriloquism. Mm-hmm. And like maybe that's why as like puppet theater artists mm-hmm. that we don't see a lot of those puppeteers because we're just in different circles, you know? It's like different markets.
And people who are ventriloquists, I do consider you puppeteers. So please don't get the wrong impression.
It's puppetry.
But I consider it an aspect of puppetry. It's its own art form because it requires its own specialized skill set. It's like all of the skills of puppetry and some additional skills, right? Not only do you have to be good at lip sync, right? And like not moving your lips and all that, like the art of ventriloquism. But you also have to be a stand-up comic because generally speaking, ventriloquism means that you are doing a shtick and you have this arc, this story arc that's very different than a theatrical story arc. I mean, you are taking your audience on a journey, but it's a comedic journey, which is different than a theatrical setting. And anybody who wants to know why I am just like so into ventriloquism, it's really because of Jay Johnson. I find him to be one of the most amazing, prolific ventriloquists ever. You should check out his show, The Dummy Show. Oh my God, I can't think of the name of it.
Two and Only.
Yes, Jay Johnson, Two and Only. But it's so good. And I saw that show and I was like, I want to learn ventriloquism. And I couldn't believe that because I never thought, oh, you know, I'm going to learn ventriloquism because it's just such a different, like I said, it's a different skill set. But Jay Johnson was so inspiring to me and used it in a theatrical way that I'd never seen before.
Okay,
so.
Z, are you ready?
What?
Okay, we, you know, that to prove that ventriloquism is such an amazing art form and a crazy technique that you have to invest many years of your life into. Okay, we are now live going to attempt ventriloquism. We are not ventriloquists.
What? But I don't even know.
But we're gonna try. We're gonna try really hard. Are you ready? So okay. We're gonna try and say something without moving our lips, right?
I'm so bad.
We're gonna get a little closer to the camera
so they can see her. Okay, this is not planned.
Because
on long
road trips, we used to do this to each other.
What
remember,
did we
like
know?
We used to be like, we were like, "Hey Z, how's it going?
You Hi know? Chad. Hi.
Oh, the pandemic is really crazy.
Well, you used a word with a T sound in it, and T's are really hard.
They are.
You know?
You make it look easy.
Well, no,
this is my go-to. A high-pitched voice. P's and T's and M's, man.
Oh, and F. F
and,
is
and
on.
F.
Yeah.
F.
So anyway, the art of ventriloquism is alive and well in many other companies. Not necessarily
this,
our company.
Not this one. No.
But we have lots of respect for it. And if you are a puppeteer of color who is a ventriloquist, contact us if you want to be a part of our Protest Puppets series. We would love to have you.
Yeah, well, there's at least one. I've met at least one black ventriloquist in New York City.
Yeah.
What was his name? It was like a decade ago.
You know what? I could tell you in a minute.
Yeah.
If you keep, why don't you tell the nice people about other things that we've been doing, and I'll tell you because I do have his name. He's a lovely person.
The highest paid puppeteers in the world are ventriloquists. I mean, Terry Fader. I mean, what an amazing story, and he's still continuing to do work. Like, amazing celebrity, making hundreds of millions every single year in Las Vegas. A team of writers supporting him to, you know, like, change up his act all the time.
William Abbott. Yeah, William Abbott. He's out of New York City. He had worked at the Swedish Cottage for a number of years. Mm-hmm. But when he does do outreach and work for underprivileged schools and schools that have a majority of a black and African-American population, he uses ventriloquism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, William Abbott came up to me after we performed Davy Crockett in Outer Space. And I had my gloves in my pocket, and as the music started, I was like, oh no, my white hands are showing, ruin the illusion. Oh, just keep going. Afterwards, he was like, hey man, you might want to think about like gloves on your hands afterwards, you know, and like
He's
maintain
right.
the illusion. I was like, I know.
You are correct, sir.
Yes.
Good
yes.
note.
Thank you. And he came up to me and told me something that would have improved. Like, not a lot of people are brave enough to come up right after a performance and be like, hey man, you gotta, you know, just do this. And I've done that to people, and sometimes people do not want to hear that at all. So I actually ask now or mention, you have a great technique to giving notes to people who really need a note.
Oh, do I?
Oh, yes. Like,
what
you don't
is my technique?
Well, you don't. You're not like as like trip and fall on your face like me, which is I'm usually like,
oh, honey.
Hey, did you know that like this is a little maybe you could do a little something like that, or like hey, or like hey, great job is my go-to. Great job. Let me know if you needed any like outside eye, like you know like
yeah, if, you always want like, to check. Some like people that. Don't want feedback. And yeah. That's totally fine. You should, like, yeah, it's your art, and, like, mm-hmm. maybe you just want to do it. And some people want feedback because they are still working on it. They're still evolving it. What is the thing that I do?
Oh, you whine and dine them. You're like,
what?
Yeah. Yeah, I you're do. Like, hey, let's go out and have a drink. Oh, this is great. Oh, man. Two beers later. Oh, man, those wings were amazing. Oh, man, your show was so good. You know what? I would, like, totally change, though. You know,
that is
this
not
is
what
like
I do.
Fantasy world situation. I want, you know, if I was
for
doing
the record,
it,
I don't whine and dine people.
You put up all these caveats, all these little, like maybes, maybe. No. It's there's an art to giving notes. And I'm like. I'm taking notes about you giving notes. I'm like, wow, she's so good about it. They respect her opinion by the time she actually gives her opinion. This is amazing. This is praise, by the way.
Okay.
I'm not ripping on you. Not at all.
Well, I don't whine and dine people, but I am very I do have I'd like to think I have a high level of empathy, and I'm always concerned about hurting people's feelings. So I'll just say, if I see a show that it wasn't for me, but I can see that there's a lot of heart in it, I can always find something positive to say about a show, you know, because sometimes that piece is just not meant for me. And that's okay. I don't have to like everything. And I think that that is a part of my critique inner brain that has evolved, because when we first moved to New York City, I think I was a high critic, which I don't like that person that first moved to New York City, that aspect of myself, because I would see something and like I would see all the negatives, all the things that they could have done better. Now I might see a little bit of that because, you know, when you're in the art, any art form for a long period of time, you think about ways that you would have done it or things that could have made it stronger in your opinion. But I overwhelmingly see the heart behind the piece, the thing that they're trying to say, whether or not it was successful. I can see, you know, the intent, you know, and what they're trying for. And that's the thing that always gives me inspiration, is like how brave people are. I think that people are so brave to do their work, because I get really self-conscious and nervous about doing my own shows. Because they're so personal, and even if they're funny, it's still personal. And so I haven't made a new show in a while, and I'm always so impressed by the people who can just be like, I'm making a new show, and then they just do it. And it's like, wow, look at you, you know, you just did that. And like all these aspects of it were so good. So I've really, you know, we're talking about pivoting a lot over the last 15 or so years. I've really pivoted to being a lot more positive about people's work in general. And then, you know, sometimes people will ask me like, oh, what did you think of it? Mm-hmm. And like, we can have that conversation, but very rarely do I go up to somebody and say, well, I have some thoughts for you. No,
right.
That's not my way.
That's not what we want to do.
No.
I don't think that's pivoting. I think that's like maturing.
Yeah, maybe I've matured.
Yeah, you become
more
forgiving, let's say. And you've seen like amazing art, and you've seen like some slam pieces, mm-hmm. you know, and like and everything in between, right? And we're all trying for something.
Well, and slam pieces can be amazing art. So it's not that amazing art and slam pieces, they're two ends of a spectrum. Like, those can be in the same category. But I've seen I've seen like really excellent work, and I've seen work that could use a lot of help. So
just throw it out, work. Just start over. Just start over.
Well,
somebody needs to come
you
up
know
and be
what?
Like just no.
But to the person who is making it, it was an important thing to say. So, I mean, it's very rare that you see something that you're just like, I don't even think the person who's performing it, whose work that is, likes it. Like, I mean, that's like, that would be a weird circumstance to be watching something and then also know that they're that this is that person's show and that they don't even like the show.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Are you a proponent of note cards?
What do you mean?
Like, you watch a workshop performance, mm-hmm. and then they're like, okay, and now we're passing out an index card and a pencil, no. and then we're gonna, you're gonna put that into the box?
No, it's too social media-ish. I don't like it. I like, well, I, you know, I like what I like. So yeah. I do it my way, which is, I help to administer this residency series at the Carriage House, which is a space that's owned by the Henson family. It's currently under the direction of Heather Henson. And so for a long time now, we've had, I believe, over 30 artists come in, and it's an invitation-only program, and have a week-long residency in that space. And then at the end of their residency, they do a work in progress for an audience of about 50 people. And I moderate a talkback session at the end of that. And I really like the way that those talkback sessions go, because I feel like, having seen talkback sessions in the past where sometimes people, like one person in the audience, can end up just running the discussion. And I don't like that, because then you have other people who feel like they're not being heard, or they don't want to, you know, interrupt. People are very, you know, conscious and kind, but or you end up getting on a topic that just like never leaves. Like, then it becomes like an argument, you know, mm-hmm. About the art that you just saw instead of a discussion. So we do it in three parts, and that I really like. I'll just go over them quickly in case you're,
please.
You're interested.
If you're ever gonna, run a Q&A after a presentation, I feel like this is the best way.
Well, and this is inspired. It's not exactly like this, but it's inspired from the Liz Linklater feedback session, information that she has published and written about for a long time, I think. So, and also I had seen Leslie Strongwater, when she was working at Dixon Place, run a feedback session similar to this as well. And so I just took the parts that I liked and then kind of made it my own. Mm-hmm. So this is what we do. It's in three parts. So the first part is
so the show has ended.
Yeah,
the theater artist or whoever was in charge, not the entire cast and crew, right?
It's usually the main artists whose work it is.
And mm-hmm. so you're seeing the host of the evening and the theater artist whose work it is sit down, and they have the microphone and they're not giving it up. And then we go into the three phases.
Well, we don't even have a mic because it's such a small room, that won't happen for a while. But those days pre-pandemic. Anyway, so we're sitting at the front of the room. Oh, and I always give them flowers, because when you work really hard in a residency, it's like a really intensive situation for at least 5 days, sometimes longer. And I just want to say congratulations. You did it. You just shared something that nobody's ever seen before. And it can be scary. So I always give them flowers. And that was inspired from when I went to a festival in Montreal called Castellier, run by Louis Lepon. And when I went to that festival, at the end of each premiere show, they gave flowers. And I thought, yes, flowers, right? Like, it's like dance. You know, when you go to a dance and it's a premiere, everybody gets flowers. You know, the cartoon of throwing flowers on stage. And I was just like, puppeteers need flowers. We need flowers. So yeah. I've just always given flowers at the end of every residency. So we hand off the flowers. Then we sit up at the front of the stage on stools, like Chad was saying. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, it's in three parts. First part is I say to the audience, let's talk about moments that we liked. The artist who's sitting right next to me, they're just going to listen. They are not going to respond. So we're just going to go through moments that we liked, moments that really resonated with us, or an image that just like is going to stay with you. Go. And usually I don't say go. I'll say, and I'll start, because I always try to grease the wheels a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like prime the pump, because nobody wants to be the first one. So I'm always the first one. And so I say, and I'll start because, why not? I have one. I'm waiting. I'm so eager. And then I'll share a moment from the show that I really like. I really liked it when the puppet looked directly out to the audience and then just breathed in that one moment, and the light was just shining right on them. Oh, that moment was just like, it's amazing. I don't know. That's like such a banal
puppety moment.
I know. But anyway, I'll shout out a very clear example of a moment.
And you'll always say, like, you can start your sentence with, right. I liked it when.
Like, I liked it when, yes. Yeah. And so then the audience will just kind of raise their hands, and I'll call on people, and they'll say, I liked it, I like this, I like that, I like that. And then when it starts to pitter down, we usually end on one really strong one, and then I'll say, okay, great. And if you think of anything else that you liked, feel free to tell our artist after the talk back, because we always have a reception afterwards.
Yeah.
So then part two is moments that were confusing, that we didn't quite understand or just didn't resonate with us in a way that seemed to help move the story forward. So I'll start. And then I list out a moment that was like a little confusing to me.
That's good, because nobody wants to be the bad guy. Like, nobody right. wants to be the first person to be like, this.
And again, in this second part, the audience, the artist is just listening. They're not responding, but they're listening. And usually I recommend to the artist that they have a friend taking notes for them, or that they have a friend who's audio recording it or something, so that they can listen to it back, but it'd be present in the moment to take it in, but not sitting there at the front of the stage writing things down.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's always helpful. And so, you know, we go through the audience, and usually there will be like a moment where somebody will say something, and then I'll see a lot of nodding heads, and then I'll say, did everybody understand that the, or did people have questions? Because we don't want it to be us telling the artist what their show is,
yeah.
but we're trying to tell the artist what we thought happened, right? So who here thought that the girl was on her way to Planet Unicorn? Raise your hand. Who here thought that she was going back in time? Raise your hand. Who here thought something else was happening? Ooh, two people. What did you think was happening? And what did you think was happening? Oh, interesting. Okay, mm-hmm. So that was clearly a moment, yeah? And I'll look at the artist like, what do you think about that? You know, and they'll go, yeah, okay. Because it's good for what the artist really wants usually is for their story to be really clear. And so what we're trying to do is create that that knowledge of what was clear and what was not clear. Because a work in progress is not about showing a perfect piece. It's about showing a piece and then understanding when you leave to go do more work what those problem areas were, so that then you can work on them to make them more understandable.
Right, like the worst thing in the world after your show is over is just silence. You know, like no boos, no cheers, just nothing. Because then where do you go from there? You gotta like kind of figure it all out by yourself.
Right, you want to know that you're connecting in some way. Yeah. So that was part two. Again, the artist just listens. And then part three is the night before, the artist has written out 4 to 5 questions in order of importance that they want to ask the audience. And I always say, like, ask about specific moments. Specificity is really helpful. Like, you could say, did you like it? Did you like the piece? That's not going to help you. So get in there and say, you know, did you understand it when the teddy bear jumped off of the diving board, that he was actually jumping into another person's subconscious? Did you understand that? Okay. And then you kind of can get a specific yes or specific no.
Mm-hmm.
So I have them write out 5 questions that are, you know, pertaining to the show, and then they can ask those questions of the audience. And then from there, we have an open dialogue. But what's nice about that, and I moderate that dialogue, like I don't let anybody take over or anything or say too much. I say, okay, we're going to leave it there. And, oh, I see a hand in the back, you know. So we try to give people the space to talk, but then also not let anybody run the show.
Yeah.
I'm running the show.
So you don't hand somebody the microphone and let go.
No. Now, because you know why? I've seen that happen. And then, you know, you lose the intention of the moment, which is to have it be a learning moment. And also, you're asking a lot of your audience to sit, watch a show, and then talk about it. There's a fatigue starts to set in, and you need to be respectful of that, because we want everybody to have a positive feeling at the end, even if the show was, you know, not where it needs to be yet. We're all helping the show. And so that helping is a positive feeling. But if we're starting to like go too long, then we start to get into like negative territory.
Right. That good feeling can flop into just like, ugh, mm-hmm. how long, much longer do I have to sit here?
Exactly. You know, exactly. So if I see, you know, some of this happening or
rubbing your forehead and
deep breaths like that, then I, you know, we kind of say, all right, we're just going to do two more and then we're going to wrap it up. So I always say that. And we try to end strong on something. Yeah. And then I always ask them, what's next for the piece? But what's nice about having the open dialogue at the end, after we've done the positive moments that everybody liked, the things that people didn't understand, and then the questions from the artists, is there very little left to talk about, actually. Mm-hmm. And then if there is something to talk about, it's because somebody didn't say something earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Or that they want to circle back to that thing because they have more to say. So it's really nice. And, you know, generally speaking, all the feedback I've received from artists is that they really like it, and that it's helped the piece. And it's one of my favorite things to do is to help to moderate those works, you know, because then we get to see them go on and get produced in real stages. And someday we will do that again. And it's really nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how I moderate artist residencies. There's a little puppetry for you.
That's how you give notes. You ask your audience. Well, it's like when in doubt, get the audience to do it.
Well, it's just like they say, positive sandwich, right? You want, like, if you're ever writing an email where you have to say something that's like, oh, not the best, start positive, then put in the thing that's not as awesome, then you end positive, and, you know, best wishes, blah, blah, blah.
So it's like the bread is good, but the meat is like,
nah. Like condiments. You got condiments.
condiment compliments, right?
Mayonnaise makes everything better.
I'm Yay. Just gonna,
you know, throw that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 8:30. Next Wednesday, like in a few days, like 3 days. Wednesday. Yeah, this Wednesday.
July 1st, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Part 2 of our protest puppet series. And we got another one coming down the pipes. The next week, we're kind of like looking at 4th of July weekend, being like, oh, we don't want to schedule anything in near that. But yeah.
But so, now we'll have at least two protest examples that people can make and bring with them, hand out to other people. Because a lot of times people just show up, but they don't have a thing to hold. Right. So you can make stuff and hand them out to people to then hold and be a part of these amazing moments. Because I have a feeling that there will be protests on 4th of July.
Oh, yeah, man.
For sure.
And I'll be listening to James Earl Jones give one of Frederick Douglass's most famous speeches. He paraphrases.
Oh, I love.
But it's just all the best bits.
The one about what does it mean to a slave, the 4th of July.
Yes.
I love that.
Every time I'm just like, oh, Mr. Douglass, spitting fire in the 1800s, be like, do you mock me, sir? I'm like, ah, it's amazing. It really makes me upset and empowered and being like, okay, it's time to go do something. Like, this hasn't gone away. Let's do something right now.
Yeah. Because we care. We care about all of you, you know, and we want everybody to be treated with love and kindness and respect. And that's really what this is about. That's what we're saying, is that everybody should be treated, you know, fairly. And we are acknowledging with these protests that people aren't being treated fairly, and that we see that, and that it's not okay. So
that's right. Yeah. Why are militarized police coming to peaceful protests? No need. Why is there all this escalation? Why is this branch of law enforcement consistently not held accountable, you know, for their actions? In other branches of law enforcement, there's a whole branch. There's like this whole career opportunity for people like inspector, like IG, like inspector general, or I forgot exactly what it's called. But like, there are like investigations that will take place that if you did something bad, you will get fired. We don't just pass you around to like the next place, right? Why can't it be like that for police also? So a lot of really positive change is happening. Sedwan was actually told us that he's super excited and it feels like it's different. now more so than ever. Mississippi just voted, I think, last night to change their flag. So the last remaining state flag with the old Confederate battle flag on it will be changed.
That's huge.
And now everyone, I feel like for the first time ever, we're all having this national conversation about, guess what, guys? The Confederacy only lasted 4 years. That's not a long time to try and hold on to our heritage, really. And not everybody in the South wanted to break away. It was just like the rich plantation class, the planter class, you know, who were handed their power right back and were totally shady. Like all the Confederate leaders, once those states rejoined the Union, were voted in as like all these generals in the Confederacy went to Washington, D.C. for the first new Congress as representatives of their states. And the Republican Congress at the time was like, nope, get out of here with that.
Yeah, Chad was, we mentioned this last week, that he watched the Reconstruction PBS special.
Documentary, yo.
And it's streaming on PBS, so you can watch that and get all fired up like Chad is.
Well, it's just like, it's fired up with knowledge, you know, about oh my God, like all this stuff happened. And I want to share with you something too.
Okay.
Because when I when I first learned as a kid, right, you're like, all right, 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Now as an adult with access to real information, you're like, wow, Columbus is a genocidal maniac.
Right.
Nobody should have statues of this guy. Nobody. I want to tell you that when we learned in my 99% white homogenous elementary school about slavery, little Chad, because I think I was in, I forget what grade, but so, it was like this. I've talked to people about this. When you think about like what happened in slavery when you're a little kid, you're white, you don't think, oh my God, that could have been me. You think,
unless you're Jewish.
Well, unless you're Jewish.
I'm just going to throw that out there.
Well, I'm saying as a white kid, you don't think, well, that could have been me. My ancestors could or were enslaved. Instead, you have this thought of but I would have been nice to the slaves. I remember this very real memory of talking to my friend at the time. And we were like, we would have been the nice slave owners. You know, very innocently thinking about it in those terms of literally like black and white. You know what I mean? We didn't have the perspective of that could have been you. Like, think about it like it could have been you.
Absolutely.
Or that it could have been your ancestors. And I feel like, thankfully, like America's having this white woken moment. and that's part of white culture is having your woke moment or whatever it's called. You know, realizing this stuff and moving forward. So I was thinking about that on the drive here today of just like, yeah, I remember those exact words popping into my head as a kid. And like the context of learning about slavery needs to be different. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, you know, I think that growing up Jewish, and I say Jewish because I, you know, I was like one of the only, if not the only Jewish kid in my school. That I knew of. There were a couple other families, but I don't think they practiced at all, and they definitely didn't talk about being Jewish. So I will say with confidence I was the only Jewish kid in my class of 92 kids, and I maybe one of just a handful in the whole school that, you know, you learn about the Holocaust and you read about the Holocaust and you think about it, and as there's just this shared historical memory of, you know, knowing that could have been you in a different time period, in a different place. Like, you could have been somebody that would have been in hiding. And actually, Jill Sobule, who is one of my favorite folk artists, she's like this pop folk artist. She was got famous for that song, I Kissed a Girl, but she is just so fun and funny. And she writes a song called Would You Have Hidden Me in Your Attic? And I just love that song because that's a real thought that I have had about people. Like, mm-hmm. No joke. Like sometimes you meet somebody and that's like one of the litmus tests, like way back in the back of my brain of like, well, you know, if things go down, like is this a type of person that would like hide me or would I hide them? Yes. Okay, cool. We're going forward with this friendship. You know, like we're going to get deep here and have like a real, real friendship. But I mean, of course, I've never been a slave. I've never been in hiding. The closest thing I've ever felt to like an actual war was what we just went through in New York City, just basically not leaving our apartment and being scared to go outside. But nobody was out to get us, just this unseen virus thing. So I'm very lucky and privileged to not actually have those real memories. But I do believe in the power of shared historical memory, like knowing that you are of a people that have been oppressed, knowing that you are of a people that continue to be oppressed, to be pointed at as other, and that does something to you. And for me, what it has done for me is made me even more proud of my heritage, even more proud to say I'm Jewish, especially as I'm getting older, and to feel like it is my duty to stand up and call out racism and bigotry whenever I see it. And well, Chad knows I do that.
She does that. She does that, and we love
her. I see it, and I will say something. I always say something. And sometimes it's those moments can be very difficult. But you know what? I have my white privilege, then I use it, and I say things. And I'll say that's not right, or I think you need to rethink that, or excuse me, that was racist. You are not allowed to say that. You're just not. I'm here having lunch with my family, and you are not allowed to just call that out to that woman walking down the street. It is not okay. So no. I'll say those things. I will.
And I think more people should. And I feel inspired by you saying those things. I feel empowered. But as I learned the last Sunday with the with our encounters with not nice people,
I need
to remember to kill them with kindness, because I was too excited in retrospect to like get right in there and be like,
Ned Flanders.
Yeah,
like let me tell you all about why this is so great.
Like, no, I mean, I'm recalling those feelings of just like, yes. Ooh, somebody's here to you know, be terrible at us. Awesome. I'm like, get right in, like, let me talk to you because I'm ready. But no, I need to be like, you know, like it's not about changing the mind. You know, just talking to them is enough. And anyway, rules of engagement. Anyway, so I need to teach some more puppeteers in 9 minutes to stream.
All right.
Hopefully, we streamed okay today. Hello to Caroline and the Puppet Podcast.
Oh yes, hello, Caroline. Hello. Caroline interviewed both of us for her podcast. So if you haven't yet, check out Puppet Podcast on Facebook, and you can see an interview with Chad, and then you can see an interview with me. And we are so thankful for you and the podcast, and I hope that you continue to grow your audience and do amazing work. I'm so verklempt by how amazing. And you know, one thing that we didn't mention about last week that we want to celebrate is that we had our 100th puppet DIY workshop that would happen on Thursday. Woo! It was a sheep humanette, adorable.
Let's get it.
So Chad's getting it right now. It's so cute. There's two of them. We could end the podcast with us both being sheep. I have to de-glasses in order to get this thing on. So if you're not watching the video and you're just listening, you are missing out, people. I'm telling you, it is the most adorable sheep humanette ever. And I teach you how to make it, and we're so excited about it. So you should head on over to our Facebook page and check it out. Let's see if I can tie this on by myself. And then you can make your own and then take a picture. Oh, no, I can't tie. Can't tie behind my head.
I'm doing it. No, maybe. So close. Oh, man.
Nobody can see you tying it.
Just bring it up. Bring it up to this camera.
I can't because I need to be able to use my paws. Hold on.
There it is. There. See, it's a little small for my head.
Well, you have a big head.
Yes, I do. Ta-da!
There we go. Okay.
See, that was perfect on you.
Little sheepies. Mwah. 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 So anyway, this was our 100th puppet DIY. We're so excited about it. I have to talk in a funny voice when I have my sheepy face on. So you should head over to our workshop videos, and we're going to have new workshops, yeah. and we're going to have build-alongs, and we're going to have watch me build stuff. Yay. And my sheep is falling because I didn't tie it tight enough, but okay. It's awesome.
It's okay.
And you should check it out. Chad, your sheep is so cute. Look
yes,
at
I
this
know.
Cute little sheepy
Yay.
Sheep.
Oh,
so sweet. And we're going to have People of Power streaming on Mondays.
That's
and
right.
like this is whole new summer schedule for July. So go ahead, check that out. We're still having live content every single day.
Yes.
But it's just going to be different. And if you're listening to this and you cannot see this picture of me as a sheep and Chad as a sheep, you are missing out, people. You need to be watching the video
yes,
over
yes.
here on our Facebook page. Before we sign off, if you like what you see, make sure that you mm-hmm. like, subscribe, and share. You can leave comments, especially comments in like iTunes. We love that. Comments on our Facebook page.
I don't think we've gotten an iTunes like review.
Oh, that would be the best.
Or
you
like
could be the first.
Or the Spotify like review. Like you can leave a thing on
You could be the
there.
First one, and we would love you forever.
Yeah.
So I mean, we already love you, but there would be even more love, like little
we'll,
love
we'll,
love
we'll
lines
give you a little,
coming
little
out.
Sheeps.
Mwah. And looks Mwah. Like the wrong end of a sheep.
Yeah,
oh,
thanks,
Uncle,
thanks,
Tom.
Uncle Tom.
Uncle Tom, we love you. There's so much love here. Look at my little heart that I am drawing with my sheepy paws.
Amazing.
Okay.
Yay. Okay,
I'm
we gotta go. We gotta go. But thanks. What's up? We are the Puppet Parent Podcast. Check us out. Check out all the archives at puppetparentpodcast.com. We're live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And ooh, look at that.
And we will see you soon.
Yay.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.